And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Syndicated across the entire northern half of the great state of Alabama. I'm talking about we cover down on some ground. And when our show goes way on down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Well, listen, we've had an amazing show so far. The entire first 2 hours of the show are dedicated to the fact that this is Memorial Day weekend and what it means to remember. I said earlier, to always remember and to never forget, which can be a little different. I mean, you're remembering things, you're drawing them up in your mind, but you're never forgetting, which means you're intentional about memorializing them. And someone who knows greatly what it means to be in the service and harm's way is our next guest, Mike Durant. CW4 Mike Durant, Chief Warrant Officer 4. He enlisted in the U.S. Army in 1979. First went to becoming a Spanish language trained Spanish voice intercept operator down in Panama. Became a pilot candidate in 1983 at Fort Rucker. Transitioned to Blackhawks. Went first to the 101st Aviation Battalion after flying medevacs for a number of years in Korea, and then joined the what was then the newly formed 160th Special Operations Group, the Night Stalkers. He flew combat operations for Prime Chance in the Persian Gulf, Just Cause, the Panama Invasion, Desert Storm, Gothic Serpent, which was Somalia in 1993, because in 1993, as we all know, what has become known as Black Hawk Down or the Battle of Mogadishu occurred. He was the pilot of Super 64. Shot down by an RPG, held captive for 11 days, and a number of things occurred in and around that battle. Mike Durant earned the Distinguished Service Medal, the Distinguished Flying Cross with Oak Leaf Cluster, the Bronze Star for Valor, the Purple Heart, among others. He's also the best-selling author of a book called In the Company of Heroes, which I highly recommend. And I'm glad he's on the air after that long introduction. Mike Durant, how you doing?
Doing great, Phil. It's great talking to you again.
Well, thanks for making some time. I know you've been traveling a bit here lately, but we appreciate you making some time for us today. Listen, man, like I texted you, we've been focusing on Memorial Day today, and just wanted to get your perspective. I mean, my thoughts are that sometimes the bonds we form in uniform are tighter and developed quicker than they are anywhere else in life. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, I've said it many times. When you are put in adverse situations with people, first of all, it exposes your true identity. And, you know, once you know you can trust your buddies, your comrades, whatever you want to call them, to your left and right with your life, I mean, that creates a relationship that just doesn't exist anywhere else. And they are brothers. I mean, the word brothers is absolutely appropriate.
Well, and you certainly had some experiences, and I mean, first thing that comes to my mind is just to ask you on a Memorial Day, Shugart and Gordon. I mean, Randy Shugart, Gary Gordon, I believe it was, and they were right there in the thick with you. Talk about that for a minute, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I wouldn't be here today if not for their actions. There's just no question about it, and they both were posthumously awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. And I didn't know this until recently, but it's the only time in history that the medal has been awarded to two soldiers or sailors, airmen or Marines simultaneously for the same act. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. When I went, there's a Medal of Honor Heritage Center in Chattanooga, actually, that has all the history of the award. And anyway, I've been working with them about it, actually having a dedicated exhibit to Randy and Gary that'll open next year. So, you know, and absolutely well-deserved. I mean, I said it in my citation, and I've said it over and over. I've never seen a more courageous act. I mean, they were in a helicopter overhead. We had been shot down. I was injured, so I couldn't move. I couldn't get out of the aircraft. And they requested permission to come in. And initially we're told no because the leadership was down to scant resources at that point. And wasn't sure, you know, where the priority needed to be. You know, it's not like we write people off, but if you've got a good chance of saving, you know, this group over here and you've got two guys left, that's where those guys need to go. It's triage, basically, if you're familiar with that term, and I'm sure you are.
Oh, yeah.
And they were told no. And you know, I think for most people, that would have been the end of the story. You know, we requested and we were told no and we didn't go, but not for them. They got back on the radio and they basically insisted. They made it clear that if they didn't take action, we would be lost. And at that point, the leadership gave them permission to come in. They were dropped off, got me out of the aircraft. We ended up defending the crash site for, it's hard to say, maybe 10 minutes. And we were vastly outnumbered, and they were both gunned down and killed. And we were overrun, and I was captured.
Well, I mean, it's an amazing memory, man, and I'm proud you're able to relate it on the show here today. And you know, I look at the quality, the caliber of those guys, and you and the others who served there during Gothic Serpent, and that was, I mean, those were the elite of the elite with Delta, with the 160th, with the Rangers. Do you have, I mean, I look at it right now, my son's on active duty, and I know who he is. I know what his character is. I have no doubts about who he is, but I look at today's society and I wonder, is our culture, are we too soft, or do we still have the ability to raise up people like what you just described?
I think we have the ability. I'm just not sure we have it in the same quantity we had it before. I think it was easier to find and easier to cultivate. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It isn't just, you know, the woke culture and everything else and where all those priorities are, but there's just a general disconnect from the military because, you know, if you think about it, all the people that were around post-World War II where we were, you know, 12 million force are gone. So people just don't understand the military, and people can't relate to the culture of the military as well as we could at one point. And, you know, that's why I say, I mean, there's still people out there like that. I just don't think we have the volume of people we had before. And, you know, it's very difficult. You know, I just read some very troubling news in the last few days where there's some discussion about cutting the Special Operations Force by as much as 20%, and that would be catastrophic. I don't know where that's coming from or who thinks that's a good idea, but you cannot recreate that capability in anything short of, you know, years, if not decades. And, you know, we rely heavily on those forces today to prosecute missions all around the globe. I mean, 24/7, it's always going on. And to think that, you know, we're going to take an already stretched in force and reduce the numbers is to me just incomprehensible. And I don't know who's pushing that, but I sure hope it doesn't happen.
No, and I agree with you. And you know what a lot of people don't realize is the majority of special operations, it's a second tier of their career. You don't usually have entry level. You do in some cases. You can join the Ranger Regiment, you know, young in your career as an enlisted guy. But the majority of times, whether it be the guys from the SF or in the SEALs or flying with the 160th or whatever the case may be, you're having to come in having had experience already. So not only are you reducing a force that is effective, but you're reducing a level of seniority of experience that the force is not going to recoup quickly overall.
If ever, honestly. I mean, you know, once you lose something that's so difficult to create, it's almost impossible to get it back. And I just, you know, I really hope that, you know, cooler heads prevail and somebody can convince the decision makers that that is not a good path forward.
Well, so
I mean, we've said for decades it's people, not equipment. You know, I mean, we've always said that, and it is. I mean, we need great equipment, no question about it, but it's second to people, and we got to, you know, stay the course on that, or we're going to be paying for it big time.
No, and I agree. In fact, I remember at some point during my mid-level career education process, I had to read General Wes Clark's a book on modern war. And the effort that was put into trying to create a sterile war that you could use guided missiles and create the entire fight, you know, from afar, like, you know, over the horizon kind of fight, it just, I don't think that's reality. I think our greatest asset is our people. And we don't have Memorial Day to talk about the missiles that we miss. We have Memorial Day to talk about the quality of the people that we miss.
100%. And you know, just in case we don't get to it later, and it's not just the people, it's their families as well. I mean, that's the part that I think for me personally tugs at my heart the greatest, is knowing that, you know, there's a part of a family that's missing in every one of these stories that can never be replaced. And that's tough. I mean, it really is.
So, Mike, let me ask you this. You first entered the service, enlisted in what, like 79, I think I said. Your situation in Mogadishu happened in 93. You were still mid-level of your career. You actually came back from that, though. I mean, some people would have gotten out, but you didn't. You came back and served. You spent 21 and a half years active duty. 3,700 flight hours, according to what I'm looking at on this bio. Why'd you stay in uniform, and what drove you to return to the pulling the stick and flying?
I loved it. I mean, the people that I served with, and I've seen this a lot actually. I talked to a lot of wounded warriors over the years, and almost without exception, they all wanted to go back to their unit because you feel this obligation to not let them down because, you know, they're not going to let you down. And I think that's a big driver in why I wanted to go back is, you know, I got through this. I can still contribute. I can still be a part of the team. It's probably going to be in a different way, which it was. But, you know, it's who I was. It was my identity. I related to that culture. I think it would have been a tragic mistake for me to get out, and I'm really glad I stayed in. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to, you know, I've served a full career.
Well, I agree with that. So, listen, brother, in the last couple of minutes we have here to talk today, let me ask you this. If you were to be giving some advice to a young troop coming in, just talking to them about what to look for and what to be a part of, what would you say?
Well, you know, I do talk to a lot of folks like that, and I encourage them to take advantage of every opportunity because there are tremendous opportunities in the military. I mean, you know, using me as just one example, I could have never afforded to get flight qualified, and I, you know, the military gave me an opportunity to go to flight school, and I mean, you have to work hard, you have to make good decisions, and you have to you know, be positive about it, but those opportunities are there and probably always will be because people have to progress, you know, from being a, you know, entry-level soldier to whatever it is they want to be. And don't let those opportunities pass you by because, you know, there's no second chance on that. And I'd rather fail at something than, you know, never have ever given it a chance. And that's, I think, a lot of young people are maybe less willing to take risks that where they may fail. And if that's the way a young person thinks, then they're probably never going to realize their full potential. They got to swing for the fence. And you know, you won't always hit it, but when you do, it's going to feel really good.
Well, you've hit it a few times, brother. You've been successful in both the civilian and the military careers that you've had. Let me ask you this, final moments, any particular names? Obviously, we talked about Shugart and Gordon a minute ago, but anybody in particular you want to just honor by mentioning their name on the air today?
Well, you know, it's everybody in Task Force Ranger, really. Certainly my crew, Ray Frank, Tommy Field, and Bill Cleveland, Cliff Walcott, Donovan Briley, the other 160th folks that lost their lives in that battle, and then everybody else that was there with us. You know, God bless them, and thank them for their sacrifices, and hope their families are doing well and have managed to carry on in the 30 years since that all happened.
Well, Mike Durant, thank you for your service, brother. Night Stalkers don't quit, right?
Night Stalkers don't quit, and Rangers lead the way.
Roger that. All right, you have a great day, sir. We'll talk to you again sometime soon.
All right, you too.
All right. Well, that was just cool. And listen, that's, by the way, that's a piece of aviation history, all right? In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that Mike Durant has been inducted into the Aviators Hall of Fame. You're talking about a guy with a Distinguished Flying Cross and one of the few people to have earned the POW medal in recent history. And an amazing story. Movies and books have been written about it. And, you know, it doesn't matter any of it if you don't have quality of character. And the idea that he's out there right now taking those experiences and putting them in places where people can gain from it is certainly something to be also given some measure of consideration. So anyway, we appreciate Mike Durant making time for us. We'll come right back from this break. Kind of put a bow on some of this, but I'm going to tell you right now, if you want to keep texting in or if you want to call in and talk about somebody you remember, you are welcome to it. Got some great text messages going on. Coming up at the top of the hour, Stephanie Smith, Alabama Policy Institute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Oh, man, I'm telling you, we've got some amazing text messages in here. Leanne from Huntsville says, great show. Thank you for honoring our military members. I want to remember my grandfather, Lawrence Smith, Army, and my dad, Leland Smith, Navy, USS Philippine Sea, both retired. Thank you, Leanne. We honor their service, too. Thank you very much. What else we got here? Brand spanking new in the text lines. We got a location, but not a name. First Sergeant Daniel Teets, U.S. Army, buried at Arlington National Cemetery. Came back from Afghanistan and was never the same. You need to have your name so you can tell us who you are, but we know you're a caller or a listener from Huntsville, so thank you very much. Allie from Athens just texted in and says, I want to remember Navy SEAL Mark Lee. He was the first Navy SEAL to perish in Iraq, and he died my first summer in Baghdad. Thank you, Allie. We appreciate it. Oh, and that last texter was remembering First Sergeant Daniel Teets is Dave from Huntsville. So, Dave, we're glad you're in the text string. We'll load you up in the system and keep on listening, brother. Badger from Athens says, Phil, read your Protect This House in the Athens Now yesterday. Awesome article. I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. And, my stuff gets printed regularly around the state, and Athens Now is actually owned by Allie from Athens, and so we're proud to be a part of her regular publications. Brian from Huntsville, I'm not seeing what it says here, so I'll get back to that one in a minute. But you got some other family members,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I just like to honor them as well. My other grandfather, Hugh Wallace, was in the Navy.
Oh, yeah, I knew him.
My uncle's James Hanks was in the Army for Vietnam.
Yeah.
And Hugh Campbell was in the Navy as well.
Absolutely. In fact, I knew two out of the three.
Yes, you did.
How about that? That's something. I tell you what, I've been reading Medal of Honor citations or descriptions throughout the show, all from Alabama. How about this one? Howard Gilmore, born in Selma, Alabama, served as a commander of the submarine USS Growler patrolling the Southwest Pacific in 1943. Commander Gilmore sank one Japanese freighter, damaged another by torpedo fire, successfully evaded severe depth charges following each attack, and on the darkness of night on 7 February of 1943, an enemy gunboat closed range and prepared to ram the Growler. Commander Gilmore, daringly maneuvered to avoid the crash, rammed the attacker instead, ripping into her port side at 17 knots and bursting her wide. It says, in the terrific fire of the sinking gunboat's heavy machine guns, Commander Gilmore calmly gave the order to clear the bridge and refused safety for himself. He remained on deck while his men preceded him below. He was struck down by a fusillade of bullets, having done his utmost against the enemy. In his final living moments, Commander Gilmore gave his last order to the officer of the deck, take her down. And the Growler dived, seriously damaged but under control, and was brought back safely to port, inspired by the courageous fighting spirit of their now dead captain. Howard Gilmore, from Selma, Medal of Honor, Alabama. I had another one here. Where did it go? This one. William Lawley from Leeds. William Lawley from Leeds. On February 20th, 1944, he piloted a severely crippled B-17 back to England from a mission over Germany. He saved his 8 crew members. He was severely wounded. His co-pilot was dead. He was able to get the co-pilot off the controls and then, because of his injuries, could only steer the plane with one hand. Blood covered the instruments, the windshield, visibility impossible. A full bomb load. The plane was difficult to maneuver. The bombs could not be released because their racks were frozen. The order to bail out had been given, but one of his waist gunners informed him that 2 of his crew members were so severely wounded they could not bail out. So with the fire and the engine spreading, he passed out multiple times due to loss of blood, but kept reawakening, pulling the plane out of a dive, and was able to bring it back and land it on a small airfield and save the rest of his crew, and was awarded the Medal of Honor for his actions. All right, folks, and these are all from Alabama, by the way. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll switch gears here in the next hour, do a little news roundup. Coming up next, our friend Stephanie Smith from API. We'll be right back.